Okay. Tonight is Wednesday night, November 28th. This is the Women's Mishnah Gemara Shir. We're in the sugya of Osek B'mitzvah Patur Min HaMitzvah, which is on Sukkah Dav Chafei. Okay. Not a problem. Not a problem. Okay, Rabotai. Last week, we started a new sugya identified as Osek B'mitzvah Patur Min HaMitzvah. If an individual is engaged in the performance of one mitzvah, he or she is exempt from the obligations that are facing that individual to perform a second mitzvah. So the Mishnah gave an illustration which said, I bracketed on page number one, is going to briefly review what we covered last week, that people who are shluchei mitzvah, who are traveling anywhere. So they were traveling cross country to go to a particular yeshiva to learn. They were going to be mikabel, their rebbe, to welcome or to say hello to their rebbe. Every Yom Tov, you're obligated, if possible, to visit your rebbe and say hello. It's called mikabel pnei rabo. Or to be podesh shvuyim. So you're traveling, you are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. And av chaf hei amir aleph, that's the sugya, that's the Mishnah. You are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. Rashi even said that not only are you are exempt when you're traveling, which under those circumstances we clearly see that you are osek b'mitzvah, but even if you're in Motel 6, with your feet propped up, watching. I said what it was. Oh, ESPN. Watching ESPN. You are still exempt at night. You don't have to go to the supper, to for dinner, nothing. Even though you're doing absolutely nothing at that particular time.
This is on the
Yom Tov. This is on. You can't be traveling. Chol HaMoed. Yeah, yeah.
And only sukkah.
No, this is the example which is given. The principle that is established is that if you are osek b'mitzvah, you are patur min ha-mitzvah. That's what Rashi said. We'll see eventually how the majority of Rishonim disagree with Rashi and would not allow you an exemption while you are in Motel 6. Whether they left the light on or didn't left the light on. You are not exempt from sukkah at night. You have to try, like any other mitzvah, to perform it. Doesn't mean you got to walk 40 miles or drive, but you have to make an effort to find a sukkah. If, however, but while you're traveling, of course you are. The Gemara then followed it up with a second example. Namely, that someone who marries a virgin, kones et habitula, is exempt from the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. Doesn't have to read the Shema. However, if he marries a widow or a divorcee, he is obligated to recite the Shema. So initially the Gemara was a little troubled by this. If it's purely osek b'mitzvah, then you fulfill a mitzvah every time you get married, assuming that getting married is a mitzvah. There is a famous debate whether getting married is a mitzvah or not. The Rambam clearly states that there is, and the Rush says there is no mitzvah to get engaged, no mitzvah to get married. There is a mitzvah to have children. That is clearly stated in the Torah. And the Rush says, in theory, you can fulfill your mitzvah without getting married. You can have relations with a pilegesh, a concubine, or any other person, and just give birth to a boy and a girl, and you have fulfilled your a biblical obligation. That's the famous Rush's opinion. This Gemara is often used as an attack on the Rush. How can the Gemara use marriage as an exemption from Shema if there's no marriage? What do you mean, Isaac b'mitzvah? He's not involved in a mitzvah according to the Rush. But anyhow, that's a second example that the Gemara gives. The fact that the Gemara distinguished between a besula, a virgin, and an almana or a grusha was addressed by the Gemara and said that the Chatan, when he is marrying a virgin, he's somewhat, his mind is preoccupied and can't focus very well on the recitation of the Shema because he's worried. It's the first time, you know, he's worried. If he's marrying already someone else, he's not terribly nervous about such a situation. And as a result, he is chayav. So in other words, the Gemara introduces the potential that tirda, if your mind is preoccupied, then you would be exempt from the Shema. But if you are not preoccupied under those circumstances, you should be able to recite the Shema. Yes?
What if he's been married before?
Same thing.
Right? It seems like he'd be preoccupied if it's...
But he's also preoccupied to see whether or not he just signed the ksuba and he got ripped off, right? She's a virgin. I got to pay her 200 zuz, right? The equivalent of about $23,000 today. If she's not a virgin, she's only entitled to $12,500, 100 zuz, 100 silver pieces. So he could be say, I'm concerned about my financial investment on behalf of my wife. Yes. Okay, but that I understand. So the Gemara introduced that. The Gemara also told us what is the biblical source of Osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. It is derived from the phrase in Kriya Shema, where the Torah says you are obligated to read the Shema b'shivtecha uvelechtecha baderech, b'shivtecha beveitecha uvelechtecha baderech. Said the Gemara, why did the Torah have to use the expression b'shivtecha? It could have said b'sheves beveisecha, or beleches baderech, when you are home or when you're traveling. Why does it have to say b'shivtecha? Infers the Gemara, when you are traveling for your own purposes, you are to read the Shema. But if you are traveling for God's purposes, then you are not obligated to recite the Shema. So if you are traveling to fulfill a mitzvah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu then grants you a waiver for the recitation of the Shema, and from here the Gemara claims we can adduce this to not only the Shema, but to every single conflict between Mitzvah A and Mitzvah B. If you're involved in Mitzvah A, you don't have to do Mitzvah B. Good. The Gemara then introduced a second possible source to teach us, and we're going to continue tonight with why the Gemara needs two sources to teach us the same halacha. The Gemara quoted the pasuk in Parshat Beha'alotcha, Vayiyu anashim tmeim lenefesh adam. There were people who were tamei around Erev Pesach time, and they came to Moshe and they said, why should we be precluded from the Korban Pesach? If you are Tamei, under those circumstances, you cannot shecht the Korban, and even if somebody else shechts it, you can't eat the meat of a Korban. So if you are not allowed to eat the meat of the Korban, that Korban can't be shechted for you. You only shecht the Korban on Erev Pesach for an individual who is permitted to eat the meat of the Korban Pesach. So the Gemara asked, who were these people? The Torah doesn't identify them. And why were they tameh? So the Gemara gives two explanations. Because after all, if a person was tameh a month ago, he could have cleansed himself. He could have been sprinkled with the ashes of the Parah Aduma, which was prepared in the Midbar on the second day of the month of Nisan, 13 days short of the first anniversary of Yetzias Mitzrayim, on Bet Nisan. Then Moshe told Am Yisrael, don't think that Korban Pesach was a one-time affair in Mitzrayim. Every year you have to bring a Korban Pesach. So he reminds them in Bamidbar, they're still at Har Sinai, he reminds them, you know what? We have to bring a Korban Pesach. So these people now became Tamei, obviously without adequate time to what? To be mitahir themselves. And the pasuk that the Gemara used was, now flip to page number 2 for tonight, and we're going to pick number 2. The pasuk says, page number 2, what happened to there? The machine, okay, number 2. It said, in line number 6, V'lo yachlu la'asot ha-pesach v'yom ha'hu. They could not make the Korban Pesach on that day. On that day, they could not make the Korban Pesach. That means that if for some reason their Tum'ah came about the day before, they would have had adequate time to prepare. So if these people who were Tamei L'Nefesh Adam buried somebody on the 6th day of the month of Nisan, they came into contact with the deceased on the 6th day of the month. Well, when is the end of the 7 days? On the 13th. So on the so we sprinkle the ashes of the Parah Aduma twice, on the 3rd day and on the 7th. So on the 9th of Nisan they could have been sprinkled. On the 13th they could have been sprinkled. They're now tahor. And they can, it's fine and dandy, they can bring a Korban Pesach. The problem was, lo yachlu la'asot ha-pesach bayom ha'hu. When was the 7th day? On Erev Pesach itself. On the 14th day. On the 14th day. So once it's the 14th day, they have to be sprinkled with the ashes of the Korban, of the Paraduma. But they do not become tahor until the nighttime. So they are no longer available to slaughter the Korban Pesach.
Well, they could eat it, but they can't slaughter because they can't be included at the time of slaughter.
That's right? Correct.
Theoretically, they really could eat it because they'll be tahor that night.
Okay,
it's
but
like
you have, but you have to be designated exactly with that group at the time. You have to be theoretically, potentially, exactly.
And there was no such thing as somebody designating like a general one for anyone who forgot.
No. Korban Pesach is a rare animal that it is only ne'echal liminuyav. You have to be designated for that Korban Pesach. You can't eat anybody else's Korban Pesach. You can't say, you know, can I have a little bite of you? No. Unless we're both designated on that particular animal. Cannot.
And if he's a Tamei, he can't be designated for later?
That is correct. There is going to be one question which I will ask a little later. But now, these people, the Gemara suggested, were initially either Mishael and Elitzafan, who took out the remains of Elazar and Itamar when they were burnt at the opening day of the Mizbeach. That was one suggestion. The Gemara rejects that because that event took place when? On Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the opening day of the Beit of the Mishkan. So they had plenty of time to what? To sprinkle themselves. It can't be that event. So the Gemara says it was a mate mitzvah. We don't know who it was. Somebody died on the 7th day of the month of Nisan, and they were faced with a dilemma. Should I not bury him, and then I'll be okay for Korban Pesach? Or do I bury him and blow my chances for Korban Pesach?
But isn't the Oseg B'Mitzvah is also kind of such a mitzvah?
Right. Which one?
Because the burial is... Has to be done. And
okay, so we're going to see the Gemara uses that. Good, we'll see. That's exactly what the halacha is. You are supposed to engage in the burial of the deceased and don't worry about the consequences that you can't bring a Korban Pesach. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded to that claim, I understand why you're upset, I'll make Pesach Sheni. So that these people will indeed bring the Korban Pesach a month later. That's the idea of Korban Pesach. It's the only Korban for Pesach Sheni. It's the only Korban for which there's a makeup. There is no makeup for any other Korban other than Korban Pesach. I have a good explanation why, I don't know, we'll see. But the only one, the only one. So now these
designates who takes gets which Korban Pesach.
What?
That's the designation.
You just go over to the person who's slaughtering and says, I want to be included in your group. And you pay for, you share the expense of the.
Once you've done that, it can't.
That's it. Cannot be removed. Okay. Right.
But none of the Navinu die the first day?
Yes. On the opening day.
So there would be time. Mm-hmm.
There was 12 days left.
Right.
And the next day, the Korban, the Paraduma was slaughtered. So no matter if they were Tameh, they had adequate time to be Mitaher themselves. Therefore, the Gemara says it was just somebody who died, we don't know who it is, and these people attended to the needs of the burial of such a person. Once you come in contact with the deceased, you're automatically Tameh for 7 days. Fine. So now, we are continuing where the Gemara says, Tzricha. Tzricha. Tzricha is, in effect, a code word for saying, I'm going to ask you a question, who needs two sources? And what is the Gemara's answer to that question? Tzricha. What do you think that means? Tzarich. We need, it's necessary. You must have two different sources. The Gemara is going to explain why. De'i ashme'inan hatam. If we are only going to have the situation of the Korban Pesach, there I might say, hasam mishum delo mata zman chiyuva de Pesach. There, on the seventh day of the month of Nisan, when this person died, the obligation to bring the Korban Pesach has not yet arrived. When is the obligation to slaughter the Korban Pesach? On the 14th. So there's really no conflict as yet on the seventh day of the month between your opportunity, mitzvah, to what? Bury this person and Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach is not here yet. So under those circumstances, I can understand why I would tell the person, of course, bury the deceased, because the mitzvah of Korban Pesach is not here later. Until later. But when you're dealing with what? Osek b'mitzvah, not on Erev Pesach, but the case illustrated in the Mishnah. What happened? I was traveling to fulfill a mitzvah. When was I traveling? On Sukkot. So the mitzvah of Sukkah is right here and now. And now, there is a conflict. I'm traveling. Should I stop doing this mitzvah of travel in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkah? Or should I not? Maybe I should stop my travel obligations. Why? Because if the only source that were available is the Korban Pesach Tumah, that is a limited case. That is a conflict between mitzvah of burial and the mitzvah of Korban Pesach that hasn't arrived until another 7 days. But I can't necessarily derive a principle that if I'm doing mitzvah A now, and the second mitzvah is incumbent upon me right now, maybe I'm supposed to stop mitzvah number one, fulfill mitzvah number two, and then resume mitzvah number one. How do I know? Therefore, says the Gemara, I'll read it again. Tzricha. De'i ashme'inan hasam. If the Gemara had only let us know there by Korban Pesach, the excuse would be mishum delo mata zman chiyuva de Pesach. Because the time for the trigger for the obligation to observe the Korban Pesach has not yet arrived. Aval hacha. But here, in our Gemara, where the conflict is what? Between travel and sukkah. Travel and sukkah. Or getting married versus kriyashma. Of course there's a conflict right here and now. I can't concentrate because I'm in the middle of getting married and I'm doing a mitzvah, and the mitzvah of kriyashma is already here as well. I'm not talking about getting married in the afternoon. There's no conflict in the afternoon. It's only at night when the zman kriyashma is. Therefore, I need tzricha. That's why I need the second, the first source as well. Because the second one is not so compelling to the rule of osek b'mitzvah. V'i ashmi'inen hacha. And if I only had our Mishnah, which describes the case of a person traveling and exempting himself from the mitzvah of sukkah, mishum deleka kares. If you don't eat in the sukkah, you don't get kares. There's no punishment. If you don't do, you don't read Shema, there's no punishment for that. There is never a punishment for failure to observe a positive commandment. Never. Except for Milah and Korban Pesach. Those are the only two. Of the 248 positive commandments, you are obligated to observe all of them. But failure to do so just means that you get no check on your record book. But you don't get an X. Don't get an X. So I could have thought that when you're dealing with sukkah, of course push aside the mitzvah of sukkah to enable you to continue to resume the other mitzvah. But when you're dealing with Korban Pesach, where failure to bring a Korban Pesach is punishable by karet, perhaps I would have said, for that type of a mitzvah, what do you have to do when you're involved in what I will call loosely an inferior quality mitzvah? What are you supposed to do? Stop that mitzvah and now focus on Korban Pesach. Therefore, kamash malan, tzricha. Therefore, I need both sources. Because each one is a little, has something that is somewhat less than compelling in helping to establish the rule. And you should always remember, as I've told you when we've looked at a Tosfos from time to time, and Tosfot gives two answers to his same question, the reason why he gives a second one, because he knows inherently there's a weakness with the first one. If the answer was perfect, I wouldn't bother writing another answer. Same thing in the Gemara. If the first source was absolutely, you can't break it, there are no challenges, I don't have to waste ink space. That's enough for me. But if I find a weakness, and the Gemara here addressed what the potential weaknesses are, yes.
Then why do we need the Shema and also the Chatan? The Sukkah and also the Chatan.
Good. We're going to see that as well. We are going to see that. I'll just give you a little, preview. Maybe the exemption by the Chatan from Kriya Shema has nothing to do with Osek B'mitzvah Patam and HaMitzvah. It's just that he can't have Kavana and therefore he's exempt. His Kriya Shema requires Kavana. It's not just a mechanical performance which you do by rote, you recite the Shema. If you don't understand what you're saying, what the essence is, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah by Kriya Shema.
You're saying the tirda part.
Yes. The tirda is because of the fact that Kriya Shema requires kavana. The tirda part by sukkah, who cares? Well, so you can't focus on the mitzvah of sukkah. Just go into it. Who cares? That's all. So it might be that Kriya Shema is an exemption, is an exception. We'll see something to that effect tonight.
Yeah, the other.
Yes.
I don't remember if this was a class example. The Rabbatina Giesman Kriyashma Shal Shacharis on the night of Pesach.
So interesting.
Why are they so concerned they have to stop, doing Sibris Yisrael, which is a mitzvah, that they have to daven? They should be.
Okay, because the answer is because once he Giesman Kriyashma Shal Shacharis, the mitzvah is over. It's only at night. The Higadata Levincha Right? By Yom Ha'u. Ask him, when is it? Lo amarti ela b'shah sheyesh matzah umaru munachim lefanacha. Mitzvah matzah is on. That's the point. So that, exactly. So they said, now it's time to read Kriya Shema. Of course. Because there are 6,000 interpretations about what those people said. Correct. Yeah. Good. Good. Yeah. So far we've seen that we've established a principle in last week's shiur or tonight's shiur. Have we come across anybody who disagrees with the principle of Osek B'mitzvah, Patam and HaMitzvah? No. And the majority of Rishonim believe that there ain't no one on this planet, not one Tannaitic source, not one Amoraic source, no Rishonim, nothing, nobody disagrees with this principle. It's a rule, Osek B'mitzvah, Patam and HaMitzvah. Now we're going to read a possibility that somebody might disagree. Go down to the bottom of the page for a second. The Gemara quotes a braita. Chatan the Hashush Vinin, a Chatan and the Shush Vinin. Shush Vinin are the men.
The merrymakers.
It really means, literally means the groom's maids. It means the people who
attend
to him. Exactly. Nothing should happen to him. To make sure that he shows up at the chuppah in one piece. One piece. Right? You had a shomrim? Exactly. We call them today in Hebrew shomrim. Exactly. V'chol b'nei ha-chuppah. Anybody who is involved, he's building the chuppah, he's the caterer, anybody who's involved to make this wedding, piturin min ha-tfilah, u'min ha-tfilin, v'chayavin b'kriya shma. They are obligated in Kriya Shema, but exempt from tefillin and tefillah.
This means on the day of the wedding?
This is on the day of the wedding. Exactly. And it could be after the wedding also, during the Shiva Simeya Mishta. Doesn't say. Either one could be effective. These Shomrim used to protect not only on Erev the wedding, but throughout the Shiva Simeya Mishta. They were also there to make sure nothing happened to him. So now take a look at Rashi. Second to the last line, I forgot to bracket it. Second to the last line in Rashi. Piturin min hatfila. Why are they exempt from davening? The baya kavana. Because tfila requires, you have to be aware of that you're standing in the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam. Just to mumble words is absolutely worthless. Umin hatfilin, mishum de shchicha shikrut, the kalus rosh. Because at a wedding festivity, people drink. And we're afraid that somebody will get drunk, and a shikur is not allowed to wear tefillin. Or, kalus rosh. What does kalus rosh mean? Levity. Exactly. They're just making jokes and things like that. And that is inappropriate for tefillin. Tefillin is an unusual mitzvah in that we never, ever fulfill the mitzvah of chinuch with a child approaching bar mitzvah until about a month before. Normally, the rule of pinky is, when are you obligated to perform the mitzvah of chinuch? When the child can perform the entirety of the mitzvah. For example, it's a Mishnah in Sukkah later on that Mem Beis Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, Katan hayodeya linna'aneya aviv konelo lulav. In order to fulfill the mitzvah of lulav on a Torah level, all you have to do is pick it up. That's it. For a tenth of a second, pick it up, put it down, you're yotzei the mitzvah. The Rabbanan said, we should do na'anuim. Wave the lulav in all those directions to acknowledge the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The basis of every pre-K song, Hashem is here, Hashem is there. It came from that Mishnah. Fine. Very nice. Tefillin is not defined as katan hayodea lehaniach tefillin. That's not what the Mishnah says. Because lots of kids, 7, 8 years old, 9, of course they know how to put on the tefillin. It says katan hayodea lishmor tefilav. Tefillin is a mitzvah a little unusual from all other articles of a mitzvah. All other articles with which a mitzvah is performed have no sanctity attached to them whatsoever. A talis has no sanctity to it.
What about a mezuzah?
A mezuzah, yes, of course. But we don't perform, we don't use it. It's on the wall. I'm talking about a mitzvah which we handle. So a talis, lulav, matzah, a shofar has no sanctity to it whatsoever. It's called tashmishei mitzvah. Things that serve the need of the performance of a mitzvah. However, if a mitzvah has Dvar Hashem, the name of God in it, then it's tashmishei kedusha. Kedusha. A mezuzah has kedusha. So does a tefillin. Sefer Torah, of course. Of course. Right. But a siddur does not, because it doesn't have to be written. It could be photostated. And that doesn't... When you photostat these sheets, they have no kedusha. Right? Doesn't. It's only if something is written does it... Uchsavtam al mezuzot peitecho visharecha. A megillah, yes. So the Torah... No, it's not.
Is it
Hashem's
name? It's not
Shemus? No, it is not. I always tell you that.
What?
In order to have Shem Hashem as Shemot, it has to be written.
Really?
Yes.
Put it all in Shemus.
I don't. Neither is the shul.
Neither is... Not even the original.
Printing is something else. Photostatting. Because printing... Photocopy, we put it in... Everyone is put into recycle. All of the hundreds and thousands of copies that are used in this shul and in schools, well, we put into recycle. You don't have to bury photocopies. Thank God. Otherwise, there'd be mounds and mounds.
There'd be no room for the
room for the person who you're burying with. There'd be no room in the grave for that. Yeah. What? No. No, I just go like this. Just like that. Yeah. That's what's going to happen to your copy tonight.
I realize tomorrow. That. You
yes.
Should take
it's okay.
It's like covering the
It's okay.
The
you don't have to listen to me. Same thing when my mother-in-law used to come, never once, I'm never coming back here for Pesach because you don't cover your counters. I've heard those arguments before, so it doesn't threaten me. Right?
Minhag turns halacha sometimes.
Okay, I'm not. Be my guest. Be my guest. So anyhow, so a katan, we don't believe even a 13-year-old has a difficulty of recognizing the sanctity of tefillin. So, but a 13 has to do it. So you have to have a little practice, so we basically do it a month before. That's the reason why we delay it. Because he doesn't understand the concept of Kiddushat HaTfilin.
What about when they used to wear tefillin all day?
What about it?
Then could they be that they were much dignified the whole day?
They have to, what?
No, that when they used to wear
people had to be aware of the fact that they're wearing tefillin.
Because they used to, right?
Yes, 100%.
So it made it, they could never be joking around.
That's correct. In Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, there are people walking around with tefillin all the time, especially in certain yeshivot. But even they see it in the old city, lots of people walking around with wearing tefillin. Yes, all day.
It's a way of keeping you in line.
I hope so. Yes. That's the idea of it.
Yeah.
The le'ot al yadecha, your actions and your mind have to somehow be devoted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's one of the purposes of tefillin. So anyhow, so since this scene, the wedding scene, can lead to frivolity and drunkenness, under those circumstances, we understand why he's exempt. If that excuse could have been for tefillah as well. Rashi could have put, you're not allowed to daven if you are drunk. Not allowed to daven. The Rambam writes that if you daven when you're drunk, tefillah to'eva. Your tefillah is an abomination. That's how inappropriate it is to daven when you are drunk. However, says the says Rashi, v'chayavin b'kriyat shema, you are obligated, that entire party is obligated in kriyat shema. Why? The mitzvat kavanata eino ela pasuk rishon. Because the kavana aspect is only for what? First pasuk, you can think about for 20 seconds. 20 seconds. Rashi here takes this position that kavanah is only the first pasuk, and it would support not Rashi's opinion, but one of his colleagues, the Ramban's opinion, about how much recitation of the Shema is mandated mid-oraita. According to the Ramban, only Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is the mitzvah mid-oraita to recite the Shema. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, when he gave a shiur, and he gave a shiur early in the morning, sometimes before Zman Kriya Shema came, and then Zman Kriya Shema arrived and was rapidly finishing. So all he did is pause for a second in the middle of the shiur, covered his Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Let's go on with the shiur. Rashi himself believes, however, that the first perek is midoraita. You have to say until v'yahavta, until uvisharecha. Rabbeinu Yonah believes that the first two parshiot are doraita, until kimei shemayim al aretz. And the Rambam believes all three parshiot are doraita. So Rashi here, citing not even his own opinion, but the Ramban's opinion, that the first pasuk is the oraita, and therefore you have to have kavanah when you recite the Shema. You have to recite the Shema. How do I know that you need kavanah when you recite the Shema? How do I know? Because the pasuk says, "Vayidvar Me'ela al levavecha." Al levavecha means an internal awareness of what you're saying, not just to plopple up words. That is the first opinion. Page 3. Page 3 is before page 2. Mishum Rabbi Shela Amru. Mishum Rabbi Shela Amru. In the name of Rabbi Shela, it was said, Chatan patur, the hashushvinin, the chol b'nei hachupa chayavin. Everybody else who is attending, who's doing a mitzvah,
yeah, but they can concentrate.
Is exempt. Is obligated. Mm-hmm. Now, you said you blurted out something, but Rashi doesn't agree with you. We're going to read the Rashi now. On the top line. Look at, it's the second line. The top line is a little erased. Chasam, you can read the top line. Chatan patur mikriya shema ditorid. His mind is a little, who knows, preoccupied. Ushe'ar b'nei chupa chayavin. Why? Let lehu lahani tanoi ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah. Let lehu lahani tanoi. Mazel late lehu? They don't. Ain. They don't agree with the principle of osek b'mitzvah, patam and ha-mitzvah. So if there is no principle of osik b'mitzvah, patam and ha-mitzvah, so what that you're cooking, roast beef for the celebration? So what that you're banging the nails into the chuppah, the poles, and attaching it to the roof? Who cares? There's no such thing as osik b'mitzvah, patam and ha-mitzvah. So you stop stop cooking for a minute and go ahead and what? And recite the Shema, daven,
like
put on tefillin.
I like what I said because it gives the proof of what's the reason.
Oh, you like what you said. That's nice.
I like what Rashi says too.
Most other Rishonim don't like what Rashi's saying, they like what you said.
Not in terrible company.
Okay. No, you're not at all. You're never in terrible company here. So that's, but Rashi says that it is a possibility that there is one Tanaitic source, his name is Rabbi Shela, who denies the entire principle of Isik b'mitzvah patam and ha-mitzvah. And therefore, he just illustrates it in this case. But if Rabbi Shela were commenting on our Mishnah's case, or perhaps on the case of those people who were faced with a death on the seventh day of the month of Nisan, he might have told them, you know what? We're going to delay the burial. You know, we delay burials. We're not supposed to. When are we not supposed to? For no good reason.
It's not punishable.
But if there is a good reason for it, we don't do it. We delay. We wait for relatives to come. You know, if it's an Adam Gadol, we wait for people to be able to come to the, you know, make the Levayat in a time when he can get a big crowd. There are things that you do. In the time of the Gemara, it was a little more dangerous to do so, to delay, because the body would decay rapidly. And Kvod HaMeis is a very serious consideration. And not only Kvod HaMeis, but even more importantly, to avoid Nivul HaMeit, to avoid the disheveling of the body, and it's not bechavod. Today, in today's times, you don't have that concern at all, and because we have refrigeration in every morgue, so nothing like this is a concern. And this has changed the halacha in most communities about burial on Yontif Sheni. Mm-hmm. The Gemara tells us that if somebody dies late Yom Tov Rishon or on Yom Tov Sheni in the morning, Jews are allowed to participate in the burial. They're allowed to bury, dig the grave, knit the tachrichen, the shrouds. You're allowed to be mechal Yom Tov completely for the deceased on Yom Tov Sheni. Today, there are only two communities left that bury on Yom Tov Sheni. Breuers and Satmar. Satmar bury on Yom Tov Sheni. They even bury on Yom Tov Rishon Al Yidei Akum. They ask a Gentile to dig the grave. The Tachrichen they probably had in advance prepared. And they ask to have Gentile drivers.
Did you have Spadim?
No.
No.
Never.
Just
of course not. That's correct. Hespedim, they don't do even a Chol HaMoed. Because you're not allowed to. And they're right. They're not worried that they're going to get fired. The Satmar Rebbe is not going to be fired because he gave a Hespedim. So they don't. The joke is that on Chol HaMoed, when you go to a Hespedim, you don't even have to feed the meter. Because it's over. They say a Perek of Tehillim, Vizehu. No kelmale, nothing. Breuers and satma. And they're very strict. Whenever the halacha says no hespedim, there are no hespedim. Most rabbis and shuls run a risk that you're going to get the family very upset that you didn't say anything. So for pikuach nefesh of your job, usually, you know, we're not allowed to. I just want to say a few words, and that's it. Yes, the home. Yes.
Not
sure. I know. Then they spoke for 2 hours. Right. That's correct. Yes.
In a state of
aninus,
you would have to daven?
No. Absolutely not. An onein has nothing to do. He is not allowed to do a mitzvah. It's not oisik. Rashi says it because it's oisik b'mitzvah. So right now, according to Rashi, that's an interesting point. These people who are confronted with the burial on the seventh day of Pesach, so they are oisik b'mitzvah, right? But if they decide not to bury, they're not oisik b'mitzvah. So according to Rashi, somebody who delays the burial, or on Shabbos, where you're not allowed to arrange for burial, an onein is chayav in all mitzvot. According to Rashi. Tosfot believes that the exemption for an onein, that's a person from the time of the passing until the burial, is because they're angry at HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they are not prepared to defer to His will under these circumstances. And the Halacha acknowledges, we understand why you're so upset with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that would apply whether it's on Shabbos or in that situation as well. You're right. Those people who wanted to bury this person who died would be exempt from davening all the next 7 days. But yet, when it comes to Erev Pesach, they bring the Korban Pesach. That's all. Because Aninus ends on Erev Pesach at Chatzos. That's it.
Another question.
If
the groomsmen, or whatever you want to call them, if they could be excused, it's almost like, what if, you know, there's people who their friends are getting married and every week there's another wedding? You know, that kind of thing. They're in that cycle where every week one of their friends is getting married. Or there's so many things that go on that you could... So it just gets to the point where you're never davening, you're never getting done. And all they're doing is they're doing these... It's not like a groom who has... Or someone who died who has to...
I hear... It's a good question.
It seems like too extreme. Won't have kavana or they not. They're doing a mitzvah.
It's a good question.
It seems just extreme.
It's a very good question.
Where's your paper and you're preparing for wedding?
Right? Or you're a grave digger. It's not my relative. I'm just digging the grave.
There's a lot of mitzvot that people do in everyday life. You do chesed for somebody. Just that. And if it's always a reason not to do other mitzvot, it seems like it's
okay, so good. We have to wait a couple of more weeks when we will develop all of the criteria and see that for a guy today who is a grave digger, unless... he has to finish the grave in 2 hours, because, and then Zman Kriyashma is going to pass. But if there's time after he finishes the grave and it's still time to daven, of course he daven. Of course he daven.
If you're going to visit your Rebbe, does it have to be on Sukkot?
Yes, it has to be over Yontif. That's the time when the mitzvah is. Lekabel pnei rabo beregel.
But otherwise, you should try not to do your traveling to do the mitzvah.
Correct.
Isn't there a thing that you should make the
attempt? Oh, yes. Ravon Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, wrote a major article about the phenomenon in Medinat Yisrael. Nobody works on Chol HaMoed. Nobody. And everybody is on a tiyul.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before these days where we came up with these little collapsible sukkot, where you put it up, I open up 2 car doors and put up something like that, no one ever heard of that. So if you were traveling, you relied on our Mishnah, because holchei drachim, I'm traveling, this is a mitzvah, part of Simchas Yontif. And I'm not going to be near a sukkah. And even if it's not oisik b'mitzvah, you don't have to go 28 miles out of your way to get to a sukkah. And when you're going to be somewhere on Har Hermon, there's no sukkah within who knows how many feet, how many miles. So he wrote a whole article. Is it appropriate for a Ben Torah to put themselves in a matzav when you're not going to be able to fulfill a mitzvah, even if you are technically exempt? And you can take a guess as to which side of the equation he decided to take. And he's got a good point. The Yontif of Sukkot comes once a year, it's 7 days, and you're going to travel a whole Chol HaMoed. You remove Sukkot to 2 days. The first day in Eretz Yisrael and Hoshana Rabbah, and that's it. So, but your point is well taken. There will be other sources, we're just getting started with this Sukkot, to develop it more fully. Develop it more fully. Good. Now, let's go for a second now to page number 4. page number 4. This is the Mishnah at the beginning of the third parak of Masechet Brachot, which has many of the laws of Avelut. Says the Mishnah, Mi shemeito mutal lefanav. Somebody who is deceased is right in front of him. Means he hasn't been buried yet. Patur mi kriya shma, umin hatfila, uman tfilin, umikol mitzvot o amurot batorah. He's exempt from all mitzvot of the Torah. So when you see a Mishnah like that, what question would you ask?
Well, he's not osek in the mitzvah, he's just standing there.
No, but the thing is, what is he doing with Meisel Mutal Lefanav? He's doing something. He's building the casket, he's daring. That's the assumption.
That he's involved.
So...
I say we mean positive.
We're always talking about positive. What question would you ask about the formulation of this phrase? Because if I only had those three, what might I say?
That you could do
that. You're obligated to do the others, and you're only exempt from what? From these three. But ask the question the other way.
Why
mention these three? Just say, Patur mikol ha-mitzvot ha-Torah. Excellent. This has led many Rishonim to claim that there's an error in the text. And that those last phrase, U'mikol mitzvot ha-amarot ba-Torah, entered the text inappropriately. And there are mistakes. Now this happens hundreds of times, thousands of times in Talmudic study. In fact, many times Rashi himself made corrections. And he tells you, I changed the text. Hachi Garsinan. He starts the Rashi with Hey Gimel, usually with an parenthesis. Hey Gimel, Hachi Garsinan. And the funny thing is, you read the text that we have, what did he change? It's right there. And what happened is that when everything was done by hand, don't forget there's no printing till the 1400s. Everything was done by hand. Rashi had his manuscript of the Talmud and he crossed out certain words and he wrote in his commentary, Hachi Garsin, this is what you got to do. Ooh. When Rashi passed, somebody got a hold of Rashi's manuscript and saw that Rashi made a change. So when he rewrote the Talmud, he incorporated the change.
But he still said that.
But everybody still says Hachi Garsina. But that's what happens hundreds, if not thousands of times throughout the Talmud. Because when it's a written text, it's bound to have mistakes. Sometimes the guy who wrote it had a terrible handwriting. You couldn't understand what he did. He made a mistake. People, you know, it's always like that in written works that it's difficult to get it exactly the same every single time.
Why don't we look at the opposite way? Why don't we say he had to say these three because these are the three you usually think that are not included. And you may think if I wrote Kol Mezakula, but I meant not those three. And you just didn't write that there because that makes more sense because we've been talking about those three all along.
So we're going to see what the impression is going to be, what you just said. Hold on. That it doesn't say this, and then what question are you going to have to ask? If it only says these three, does these three represent a principle that you're actually exempt from all other mitzvot? Or do these three mean what? Only these three. We're going to read the Rabbeinu Yaina, the Ran in a minute. Hold on a second. So that's what happens in that case right there. It says, Mishemeso mutal lefanav patur mikriyeshma tefillah minatfillah u'mikol mitzvot ha'amarot batorah. Flip the page now to page number 5. And this is the commentary on the right side where I bracketed. Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah. The Rabbeinu Yonah did not write this lengthy commentary on Masechet Brachot. His students wrote it. Ask Michael Schmidt. I don't know. It's because it's identified that way in the manuscript. Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah. And at the beginning of the Gemara, it says, this is Talmidei Rabbi, quoting their Rebbe, Rabbeinu Yonah. So the he makes the following statement. V'yesh mifor, let's start early. Good. Look at his text. Look at his text. Look at the caption. Patur mikriya shema u'minatfila u'minatfilin. Did his text have those three words?
No.
U'mikol mitzvot ha'amurah batorah? No, that's not what he had. And he writes, Kachi hagirsa b'chol hasfarim hameduyakim. That's the way it appears in all of the accurate manuscripts. Without those words. One of the shocking things about this problem is how incredibly consistent a Sefer Torah is. Sefer Torah is also handwritten, still is handwritten. And yet, it's the exact same words in every single Sefer Torah. Because Sofrim take incredible care when they write a Sefer Torah. They can only copy it from an existing Sefer Torah. They can't look at a Chumash. They have to look at it at kosher Sefer Torah and say outward, V'hayu, V'hayu, I'm writing V'hayu. Hadvarim, Hadvarim. Between Ashkenaz and Sephardic Sefer Torah, there is only one letter that is different in the whole Torah. In Sefer Vayikra, Parsha Shmini, the word Daka, which talks about the Korban Chatas, it's part of the death story of Nadav and Avihu. In our Sifrei Torah, it's with an Aleph. In Sephardic Sifrei Torah, it's with a Hey. That's the only difference between Sephardim and Ashkenazim, which is just incredible how meticulous we are and loyal to the text. Not so with any other manuscript of any other holy text. Mistakes galore. Galore. So now writes the Rabbeinu Yonah, V'yesh b'farshim, and there are those who say, Linda is one of them, she is the yesh b'farshim. The kevon v'lo shaninu b'mishneh b'feirush, shepatur mikol mitzvot ha'amarot b'torah, since this text does not include explicitly that you are exempt from all other mitzvot, eino patur ella me'elu hashlosha bilvad. You are only exempt from these three mitzvot. Avol b'shar chol hashar chayavim. In all others, they are what? Obligated. That's what they suggest. Umevi'in ra'aya. And they bring a proof from the Gemara which we just read in Maseches Sukkah. Mida'amrinan v'perek hayashen. That's the name of the second perek. Chatan patur mikol mitzvot ha'amurot b'Torah. Chatan is exempt from all mitzvot of the Torah. V'tana shila chayav. Shela said that everybody except for the Chatan is obligated in all those mitzvot. The Omrim, and these people think, the Hasa Mashma, the Hilchata Kishela. Some people believe that the Halacha in that case is like Shela. Now, if Rashi was right about Shela, and the Halacha is like Shela, what have we been doing for the last 2 weeks? Wasting our time. Because there is no such halacha of osek b'mitzvah, patam and amitzvah. That's a possibility. That's a possibility. That's the conclusion that some people have reached. That some people have reached. Says, skip a couple of lines, and now go to three lines before it ends. It's in the middle of a line that says, V'ein zenira lemori harav. This does not appear appealing to our Rebbe, Rabbeinu Yoina. Sha'ota ha-braita de sukkah, that braita in Masechet Sukkah, the Nevi'in Raya Mimena Shechaya B'chol Shara Mitzvot, Kfar Tirtzo Rashi Zal Ve'omar, Delo Svirule Ha'osek B'mitzvah Patim in HaMitzvah. Aval Anan, we don't paskin like Shela, like these guys thought. We paskin Anan Kaimelon the Ha'osek B'mitzvah Patim in HaMitzvah. Potter, we paskin. So when the Mishnah mentions only these three things, what is running through the Mishnah? If Osek B'mitzvah, Potter Min HaMitzvah is a general rule, what is this mitzvah saying? What are these three cases saying then?
Is it
the
exception?
But?
No, I think they're the exception.
So they're obligated in those three mitzvot?
No.
It's standing for the
other. So then why? Then why do I need three examples? I don't need it. Should have just said Patur Mikol HaMitzvot Shabbat Torah.
But maybe you have to say it because it's not whether Patur Mitzvah. So because there's a machloket, so we have to.
So he's going to have a long song and dance now to explain why those three examples are there.
Because maybe they're so just integral that you wouldn't think you should
exactly
say Shema. Like, it's so integral.
Exactly. Exactly.
That you would not want to give up.
Exactly. Saying, you know what? You don't need the sukkah, okay. Not to recite the Shema? Not to daven? Not to put on tefillin, which is the edut between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're not going to do that? What, are you ripped? I couldn't tolerate that. So what the Mishnah really means, that he is patur because we believe Osek B'mitzvah, Patim in HaMitzvah. But I could have thought that these three are the exceptions. Therefore, the Mishnah has to say, you know what? Even these three are exempt. Even these three. Had I just listed it in the broad sense, you're exempt from every mitzvah, you would never have thought that there should be any exceptions to the rule. So the Mishnah lets you know that these three are potential exemptions. Not that they're the only three, just the opposite. There are no exceptions, but potentially they could have been. Says the Mishnah, even though tefillin and kriya shema and tefillah are so significant, nonetheless, the mitzvah which you were involved in, at least in bracha, you're preparing the body for burial, outweighs any mitzvah of kriya shema, tefillah, and even tefillin. That's how the Rabbeinu Yonah learns this Gemara. So what emerges then is that according to Rashi, the Gemara which we read tonight in the name of Shela, and the one who said it before, that the Chachamim said that the Chatan is exempt from Kriya Shema, Tefillin, and that. So Rashi thought that the reason why the Chatan was exempt was because of Oisek B'mitzvah, Patim in HaMitzvah. That's what Rashi thought. And Shela then, who says they're obligated, comes to the conclusion, according to Rashi, that there is no exemption of Oisek B'mitzvah, Patim in HaMitzvah. And therefore you are chayiv to read the Shema, put it on tefillin and daven, when you are a Chatan or the caterer or whatever else it is. According to the Rabbeinu Yoina, that's not true at all. Everyone agrees that Osek B'mitzvah, Patim in HaMitzvah. But the Chachamim say those three cases are included in the exemption. That's why the Chachamim mention these, the Chassan and the guy are exempt from those three. And what about Rabbi Shela? What does he say? Those three are not exceptions. Rabbi Sheila, according to the Rabbeinu Yonah, is not disagreeing with the principle of what? Osek b'mitzvah. That's a universal principle. Not the way Rashi learned. But I believe there are three exceptions. Why? Exactly what you said. The same reason as to why the Chachamim said it was mentioned, even though they are exempt, because I could have thought that these would be exceptions. Shayla says,
These are exceptions.
Yeah. That's why the Chassan gang are obligated to do all three. Because they're so significant and so important.
The Chatani
gives an exemption from Kriyat. That's correct. Yes.
But how does that mean that he doesn't believe in Osteik Mitzvah if he's saying they're doing a mitzvah? So why aren't they...
That's just it. No, they're obligated. They have to find...
They're not obligated.
But correct, they have to find time to do it.
So what about the whole idea that these are time-dependent mitzvot as well?
That doesn't mean it.
Well, no, because if you're doing a mitzvah and you need to get it done right away, then the time things are the things you can't do.
Correct. So, I said that. If the guy who's digging the grave said he's on a time clock... Same thing with the Chassan guy.
Right.
He has to have, he's getting married at 6 o'clock. He's got to, then they continue to be exempt. But don't take a break.
But what if you're doing a mitzvah that isn't time dependent?
Then of course.
Mitzvah, then you should do it, right?
Correct.
Only for really the things that you
We will see. Oh, that's going to be, some say it's only by a mitzvah overet. But what you say, the mitzvah will expire. Others say, no, it applies even by not a mitzvah overet. For example, you're doing a mitzvah, okay? Such as sitting in the sukkah. Now you heard that there's somebody in the hospital who's sick. Do you have to leave your sukkah in order to go visit him? Could visit him tomorrow. Can visit him after sukkahs. But are you obligated, or should you abandon your sukkah? And go? That's not overt. Some say that osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah means even if the mitzvah is not going to be overt. Right now, you're in the sukkah. You don't have to go visit anybody. After Sukkot, you have no more mitzvah of sukkah. You go visit the person in the hospital. I'm not looking to be cruel, but we're just looking at the principle. How do we... We'll see that in the sources as well. This is a long, big sugya. All right? We'll stop here, Rabotai. Probably we might do a Hanukkah share next week.
Can I ask a quick question?
Oh,
maybe, I hope. So we're traveling to see Amitai next week. He's
beautiful.
In California, but it's Hanukkah.
Okay.
So
when are you leaving?
2 days. We're leaving Thursday night. We're going to leave our house before candle lighting, but we'll get there at 11.
What time is your flight?
Our flight is at 7.
What time are you leaving the house?
Probably 4:30.
You can light at 4:30.
Can we light somewhere that we're going to leave, that we can leave candles?
No, if you're not going to be in your house, I know you feel uncomfortable about leaving your house, but I know, then you're not obligated at all under those circumstances.
We shouldn't light when we get there.
Absolutely not. What time are you getting there?
11.
Oh, 11?
California's 3 hours behind us.
100%.
So we could just light when we get
100%.
There.
100%. Okay. But it's his apartment?
We're going 2 days to his apartment, then the next question is the last day we're going to be in a hotel.
Okay, so in his apartment, what you're obligated to do is... contribute, you have to give him some money to contribute, and then some say you contribute and you are yotze through him.
We don't really have to give him some money because we give him all his money.
Okay.
So that should really be fine.
So then you can lie whenever you get there.
Okay, and then
in a hotel.
Sunday night we're going to be in a hotel.
You can't lie in a hotel. They're not going to allow you to.
Right, no, that's why I'm...
So... if you can't, you're exempt.
Okay.
So, so you're exempt. If you're on a plane, you're exempt. You know.
Okay. So we're staying with him the rest of the time. That's the only night that's
right.
Going to be a problem.
Okay. That'll be a problem.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
This first question is kind of I guess I have to go somewhere on Monday. I know I want to know how early I can light because I have to be somewhere at 6 o'clock.
What time do you have to leave?
between 5 and 5:15. 5:15 is like cutting it.
Okay, so you can light at 4:30. Right after sundown. Shkia is 4:31. Something. Just look at that. And lechatchila, you're allowed to light that. No problem.
So the other night, should I light that?
I wait until after. I do it after shkia.
Because I was waiting until.
You don't have to wait until 6. No. That's one.
I'm still a slow, so I want to know. I have to wait to get a haircut.
Until somebody says you need a haircut.
Until someone says. But someone says it after shloshim, or something
after shloshim. So it's a minimum of shloshim, and then beyond that, you know. Yes.
And what about coloring my hair? Can I do that?
Yeah.
Even now,
no, you don't have to. No.
Are you allowed to wear Shabbos clothes on a weekday?
100%.
This is just something that I read it before. What about social acts? Those things are really important to do, like, you know, Shabbos meals, going to the Kiddush here in Shul.
Right. So, going to the Kiddush in Shul, you can come, have a bite, but you shouldn't hang around. That is true. But if you're invited out for a Shabbos meal, 1,000% you should go, no matter how many people are there. Yeah. Because it is agony to be alone for a Shabbos meal. If you don't feel that way, then don't accept it.
All right, but the Shabbos meal is okay. It's okay to go.
Yes.
After Shloshim or now?
Even during Shloshim. Because the social life aspect, nothing, to do, no difference between Shloshim and the whole year. So it's whatever is mutter during the year, for this is even during the Shloshim.
Why is that? So everybody has, you know, things that, like, you're supposed to only, you know, limit it, like only one family or something.
I always say that. But when someone is single, I tell them 1,000. I tell them they can invite as many people as they need, and they can be invited to as many people. Because I don't think it's out, you know.
Okay, so is it also like even going anywhere with friends, like group of friends, if they're going to movies, not to live music, but like they're going, you know, going shopping, going whatever.
You can go to live music also with two people, with just one friend. Certainly go to a movie with one friend. That's not a problem.
Okay.
All year.
Okay, good.
No problem.
No, thank you.
Yeah.